This is the Premier League Preview Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at @Premier_podcast. Find us on Facebook under Premier League Preview Podcast or online at plpreview.com. Hello. Very welcome to the Premier League Preview Podcast. It's match week 5. I'm Sean Fitzmaurice. I'm joined in studio by the man with the stats, Mr. Owen Maloney.
Howdy.
If you're new to the podcast, along. If not, make sure you like, subscribe, review. We're on iTunes, we're on Google Podcasts, we're on all Spotify, anywhere you want to find us, we're there.
Pretty much anywhere. If we're not on a particular podcast app or streaming service, then they're not worth having on your phone anyway. So just delete it and get a better one that we're on.
Exactly. And follow us on Twitter at @Premier_podcast or find us on Facebook at the Premier League Preview Podcast. Anyway. Now that all the housekeeping is out of the way,
let's get down to brass tacks.
Let's start talking about match week 5. The Premier League's back. International break is over. Yay!
Thank God. Thank God. Those international breaks, while it's only a week or so, it often feels like a month. It just drags on for some reason.
Yeah, I also think that the first international break is kind of like, once that's over, it's when the season really starts.
Yeah.
Like a lot of most of the teams in the league, barring probably the top two teams, the first four games of the season, they're kind of a gimme. It's when you're finding your feet in the league, you're finding out what your new players are like, you're just back from holidays, getting match fitness and all that sort of stuff. So after the first international break, that's when you come back and you're like, this is it now, this is our season starting.
Yeah, definitely. The funks are over now. There's no excuses after this. You can kind of forgive teams bad games early on in the season. You've players coming back from international tournaments, just a bit, maybe put on a couple of pounds while they're on their holidays with their families, which is understandable. Things just kind of maybe come into gear slowly, because seeing as it is a 38-week season, or obviously longer, it's such a long season that you can forgive a slowish start. But now we're kind of, after the first international break, it's really into it now. And from the next game week 5, 6, 7, 8 are the game weeks where you will see trends and gaps developing. We are already starting to see trends in the Premier League this year, but which is very early in fairness, but as the game weeks progress now for the next month or so, you're really going to find out where teams are, like the likes of, say, maybe Man United or Spurs or Arsenal. You're going to find out fairly soon where they probably sit this season.
Exactly. And that brings us on to our first game week, I think, very nicely. We'll start off by talking about, which I think, on paper, doesn't sound like the most scintillating of fixtures, but I think this one is really intriguing. Manchester United at Leicester City.
Yeah, it's this is going to be an interesting fixture. It's going to be tough for United. They're really starting to, the pressure's starting to come on. They've looked in fits and starts this season, like they are good, but then they kind of mistake here and there in a game can kind of give away a late draw or lose, as we saw against Palace at the weekend. The previous game week.
Yeah.
But this Leicester are playing good football as well. Jamie Vardy is banging form. It's to me, this is going to be a tough game in front of the home fans at Old Trafford. That's going to be a really tough game.
A very interesting statistic and a very worrying statistic for Solskjaer is we lost our first Premier League manager at the weekend.
Yeah.
Javi Gracia was sacked with a record of 5 wins in the last 16 games. Solskjaer is currently on 3 wins in 16 games.
Yeah, that's a damning enough statistic. And as we said, the squad and management are kind of under pressure now. They kind of have a chip on their shoulder and they have a point to prove already. If they don't start proving that point, we could see manager number 2 going fairly quickly, because we all knew that Ollie was kind of in there on a wing and a prayer after being put in there temporarily toward the end of last season. And now that it's kind of his team this year, if they don't start performing, there's going to be an issue and he could be out of there fairly lively.
Yeah, it's looking kind of that way. All right. The only saving grace is they are at home for this game.
Yeah, but they're at home against Palace too.
Yeah, Palace is kind of an anomaly because they're one of those sides that just kind of takes points from the bigger teams. And, you know, if you're going to have a bad day against anybody in the Premier League, it's more often than not, it's going to be Crystal Palace.
Yeah, if it's one of the supposed kind of weaker teams, Palace do further, they get their fair share of scalps, like of big teams. And you look at it, they've only scored 3 goals this season in 4 games and they scored 2 of them at Old Trafford. Yeah. You know, so that says that kind of sums up Crystal Palace to a T, really. Like, but Brendan Rodgers has Leicester playing lovely football there. there's a real kind of feel-good atmosphere around the club at the minute. They have a fairly solid midfield as well with Tielemans, Perez, Chowdhury, Madison is playing well. You've Barnes there, and obviously Vardy's doing the business up front. Nothing spectacular at the back, but they're not backbenchers by any means. They're a fairly solid back four. So
I mean, they're sitting third in the Premier League after scoring 6 goals in their first 4 games. You know,
yeah,
that's a good result for a team like Leicester.
Exactly. On all form so far going in, they have a right chance of getting a result in Old Trafford. But as we've said, United in fits and starts have looked fairly good. Like, how they didn't beat Wolves, only God knows. In fairness, they took a long time to get going against Palace. James got a late equaliser, and we thought he was after rescuing a point. But then Van Aanholt did what Van Aanholt did and got the late goal. And then against Southampton, they didn't look really any world beaters. And even though they were the man up, they weren't massively the better team. And for a lot of it, Southampton were like so. Yeah, it is fits and starts with United, and that's the worry. Like, you're seeing flashes, but at the same time, you're seeing flashes of really ugly football too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And they didn't really start to turn up to that Southampton game until Southampton went down to 10 men in the 75th minute.
Yeah, so there you go. So, yeah, it's a bit of a bewildering one with United. Your fans must be wondering. Obviously, the trend is looking good. You've Daniel James has come in, Wan-Bissaka, Harry Maguire. You've kind of gotten rid of some of the dead weight in the squad as well, going to Italy and such. The trend is in an upward fashion, but I don't think it's fast enough for United fans. That's the issue. They don't want another year of mediocrity. They want to be in Champions League football, and as they've shown over the first 4 games, they're not up to it yet. But now this is an important game for them. If they go and get another draw, they're losing more ground again, and that's that, and it will become a gap, will become a chasm, and they won't be able to bridge that.
It's a really awkward situation for the fans because there's so much love for Solskjaer, and every United fan wants to see him do well, and no United fan wants to be the one to turn around and say he needs to be sacked. But if it was any other manager, if it was anyone that was brought in from outside the club, they'd be up in arms at this point.
Oh, big time. As you said, your stat there tells a lot. 3 wins out of his last 16 is it's a stat that wouldn't be tolerated in Manchester United in years gone by. And I don't know whether it's a kind of weakening of the standpoint of the club, where they demanded greatness and had it for so long under Ferguson. Now is it maybe a case of they're accepting where they are more than they would have before? Or is it a case of let's just give Ole a chance this year, a fresh start?
Yeah, I think United fans understand that, like, they're clever enough to understand that there needs to be a rebuilding process at the club. Like, there's a lot of players need to go from that club, and there's a lot of players need to be brought in.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you need to see signs of those improvements on the pitch. When you bring in a new manager, you need to see that something is happening. But looking at it over the last 16 games, is it any different than what was happening under Mourinho? Is it any different than what was happening under Van Gaal?
No.
I'm not entirely sure it is.
No, it doesn't look it. And even Neville said it'll probably take 2, maybe 4 transfer windows before United can right the wrongs of the last few years. So in fairness, might be a bit unfair to ask Solskjaer. I know when he came in at the start, their form turned up, as often does with a new manager coming in.
Yeah.
It can often, the form can spike in it with a change in manager. But look, it hasn't been great since. But at the same time, like, you can't turn dirt into gold. It takes time.
Yeah, but even if you were a United fan and you were sitting there and you could say, okay, we're not getting the results, but the football we're playing is much better, so the results might come. Like, look at Chelsea, look at what the football they're playing under Frank Lampard. They're conceding bags of goals, but they're playing the football that fans want. So he's going to be given a little bit more grace than what Solskjaer is. At the moment, United aren't even playing good football.
No, they're not really. In my favourite phrase today seems to be in fits and starts. There's times where they look to be nice, moving the ball well, counter-attacking quickly, but there's times where they're making silly mistakes, and it's just putting pressure on themselves. They're just not looking, playing with any real fluency. But Frank Lampard's in a fairly similar situation, I suppose. Now, obviously the transfer embargo is different there, but probably has unlimited goodwill with the fans.
Yeah.
And they are playing nice football going forward, in fairness to Chelsea. But I think Lampard has more rope than Ole does at the minute. to be honest, especially because Lampard's circumstances are more hindering.
Well,
but
seeing as we're talking about Chelsea, let's give a score prediction for this game and we'll move on to the Chelsea game next.
I will go 1-1. I think Leicester are going to grab a draw here.
I think home advantage is going to play for United on this one. I think it's going to be United 1-0.
Do you know what? I nearly would have agreed with you, but the last few weeks I've kind of been like, United are going to come good soon. They're going to come good soon. They're going to turn this fits and starts of play, and they're going to be angry with the fact they're not getting results, and they're eventually going to convert it into a full 90-minute performance, and they're going to look good. But I've kind of just been saying that for a few weeks now, and it hasn't happened. So I'm just going to side with what the form is telling me, and that the fact that Leicester are playing really good football at the minute, as good as most teams in the league, and they're not an enviable fixture at the minute. So, and United aren't playing great football. So to me, I think Vardy could terrorise that back four, and Leicester play really good football in midfield. So to me, I think they'd be well up to getting a draw.
Yeah, and the fact that it's Harry Maguire's first meeting against his former employer, he's either going to have the game of his life or he's going to have an absolute horror show.
Yeah,
it's not going to be down the middle.
It wouldn't surprise me if Vardy took him to the cleaners just for old time's sake.
Yeah, what's it? Slab head.
Yeah, exactly. But go on, sure, we'll kick on anyway.
Okay, so you're going a draw on that one, and I'm going 1-0 United.
Sounds good.
Cool. That brings us on to, seeing as we were talking about Chelsea, we'll move on to Wolves Chelsea, which is another interesting and probably exciting fixture.
It is. It's again not an easy fixture for Chelsea. The Wolves play nice football.
Yeah.
They're in the Europa League now. They're a side that maybe, because they came up from the Championship so recently, that teams maybe don't give credit to, but they're a side that can play football. Like, and we saw it, got a draw against United recently. They can play against the big teams. Like, I think it was the fifth or sixth best defensive record in the Premier League last year.
Yeah.
They're well able to defend and they can move the ball forward.
They've got some very tidy players up front, the likes of Neves and Jimenez.
They're a good side, and Chelsea are, we've said it now for numerous weeks on this podcast, they're susceptible at the back.
Yeah.
Their back four is leaky at best, very dodgy at worst. So while they're playing good football going forward, undoubtedly Chelsea, they're attractive to watch at the minute. They can be caught here. They can be caught by Wolves.
Yeah.
Like, this is another really dodgy game for a potential or supposed Big Six team. And again, not to go rush into predicting the result, I would fancy Wolves to get something here.
Yeah, I said it in the last week's podcast. Chelsea have conceded a lot of goals, and most of the goals they've conceded are against the two promoted sides. So it's not looking good for them at the back, unless there's a massive change in the back four, or Conte is fit at the weekend. That could change things.
It's key he comes back and as quickly as possible. Now, I don't know what the update on his fitness is at the minute, whether he's back and whether he's ready to rock, but he is crucial to that team this year. Like, he's going to have to sit in front of that back four and mind them like a newborn baby, like, because you can tell they are susceptible in this league this year. They're going to be caught time and again until Rudiger comes back as well. There is a serious issue there. And when Kante comes back, we've seen how good he is. He's one of the best defensive midfielders in the world.
Yeah.
And he's going to make a big difference to this team. I'd say Lampard is literally counting down the minutes until he arrives back on the field, and it will make a big difference to Chelsea. But if he isn't, again, I'd fancy Wolves to score at least one goal at the weekend.
Yeah, at least one. I think why we've been eulogising about the excellent football that Chelsea have been playing and how great they look going forward and how brave it is for Lampard to adopt this philosophy, there does come a time when a manager needs to think about his philosophy.
Big time.
And put his stubbornness to one side and say, it's all great playing great football, but I need to get some points on the board to save my job.
Oh, 100%. Sure, look at it here. Like, they've conceded 9 goals in 4 games.
Yeah.
Do you know, that's not acceptable for Chelsea. You will not make top four. Not a hope in hell will you make top four conceding more than 2 goals a game.
You won't make top six.
Yeah, you won't. You'll be lucky to make the top half of the table, and right now they're sitting in 11th. So, and that it's a fair reflection. The table doesn't lie. And while, again, they have looked good at times, they're still getting caught at the back. Conceded 9 goals in 4 games. It's too many. And their goal difference is -3. You know, that tells its own story, you know. So while
Wolves aren't having a great time themselves, though. I mean, they're sitting in 17th place in the league at the moment. They're playing a lot of games with Europa League. I think they played 10. I think this will be their 11th game already this season.
Yeah. Three draws, though. It's not the worst in the world, you know. They've only lost one game in four. It's not a real reflection,
yeah,
you know, of where they are. They're going to be tough to beat, and they're going to pick up points. I know they could be a bit leggy. Maybe this international break came at the right time for them.
Yeah, I suppose they wouldn't have an awful lot of players that would be playing in international teams.
Yeah, so to me, if they had that week break, that could be the best thing to have for them at the minute. But
I often think, though, for teams the size of Wolves, I mean size as in squad size, that maybe it's better just to sack off competitions like the Europa League. Is it an unwanted distraction?
It is and it isn't. It's a way of, I suppose, boosting your club's profile, being playing on those glorious Thursday nights away in Kazakhstan. You know,
but it's all well and good boosting your profile for one season, and then you find yourself in the championship next year. You know?
That's you're robbing Peter to pay Paul in some respects, because you're obviously losing energy. You're expending energy that you just don't really have, as you said, with a squad that is fairly limited in quality and numbers, really.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they don't have those five or six marquee players. They maybe have one, two, you know.
Exactly.
And like, it is tougher for them. And you're expected to go on rotten journeys on a Thursday night and then come back and play on Saturday or Sunday, and it'll catch up with you eventually. And to be honest, we all know Wolves are going nowhere in the Europa League. You know, let's call a spade here.
Exactly.
What are you gaining? I know your argument. What are you really gaining? You're not gaining much, and you're probably sacrificing more in the long run.
Yeah, I know there is basically, there's obviously a financial kickback, but I think there comes a point where you have to say, we're going to make a lot less money in the championship. So is it really worth the financial kickback?
Yeah, it is. It's a tough one. But I suppose getting back to the task at hand, which is the Premier League.
Yeah.
This Chelsea game, right now, I'd fancy them. If they are refreshed after the international break, I think they can get a point from Chelsea. I can see them scoring a goal or two, definitely. If Chelsea don't shape up at the back, I just don't see how Wolves don't score, to be honest. It looks like fairly an open gate at times. So yeah, to me, I'm going to go again with a scoring draw, maybe a 2-2 draw. Because again, as we've seen, Chelsea aren't having much trouble scoring either, to be fair.
You're going to spend the whole day on the fence then, yeah?
we'll see.
Yeah, well,
Splinters are sore after a while.
I think Wolves are going to win this one, because I think they have a good defensive record. And if Chelsea persists to play the way they're playing, then there's goals in it for Wolves. The only way that I see that Wolves won't win this is if either Conte is back or Lampard has had some revelation and changed defence, took Kurt Zouma out and moved things around, done something. But if it's the team and formation that's played in the last three games, then it's a Wolves win all day long.
That's a brave call. And I suppose a nice little segue, you mentioned defence there. The team that I would not think I would be saying this about, Crystal Palace. The team with the best defence in the Premier League so far this year. They've conceded a grand total of 2 goals in 4 games. Against Spurs, who's conceded treble the amount of goals. They've conceded 6 in 4 games. And Spurs host Crystal Palace this Saturday. And again, seems to be a bit of a... We've talked about this in the last few weeks. Seems to be a small bit of an undercurrent of maybe tension in the back room or in the squad with Spurs, and things just don't all seem rosy in the garden at the minute.
What we'll do is we'll take a little break and we'll come back and we'll talk about Spurs Palace straight after. Now, welcome back. This is the Premier League Preview Podcast. I'm Sean Fitzmaurice. He's Al Maloney.
Yurt.
If you're liking what you're listening to, make sure to subscribe, leave a review. If you're not, leave a review anyway and tell us we're brutal.
All criticism is welcome.
Yeah, I love a bit of criticism. And if we can get into a little Twitter spat over it, that'd be more fun.
Better again, yeah, exactly.
Follow us, Premier_podcast on Twitter, or find us on Facebook at Premier League Preview Podcast. Now, just before the break, we started talking about Spurs Crystal Palace.
We did indeedy. This one is an intriguing one, but Palace are just palacing the living Palace out of this season so far. They're sitting here in fourth, having only scored 3 goals in 4 games, but conceded 2. This is just the most Palace-y thing ever.
In why we trust.
Yeah, in why. But I think why is going to have a bad weekend this weekend, because I think Spurs have a bit of hurt in them after the last couple of weeks, and I can see it exploding all over Crystal Palace.
Yeah, but if anyone's going to go to White Hart Lane and get a result, it's Crystal Palace.
It is. While I agree with that, and we all know Palace are well capable of taking big scalps, I don't see it this week. My own opinion, I just don't. I just see Spurs winning this one comfortable enough now. I think while we referenced at the start of the podcast, you're going to see trends now. You're going to start finding out where teams are. I think Spurs have had a bad start to the season, but are going to go upwards. That's my opinion. I think there's a perfect fixture for them. We'll get on to Liverpool and Newcastle soon, which I reckon is a perfect fixture for Liverpool to just keep the pressure on at the top of the table. I think this is a perfect fixture for Spurs to put the pressure on the likes of Man United, Chelsea, Arsenal for the race for the top four.
Yeah, I said it. We did a season so far podcast at the weekend just gone, and I said that it's only a matter of time before Spurs sort themselves out and start climbing back up the table to where they probably belong in the third, fourth position.
Ah, yeah, definitely.
Maybe even second position. They have a squad to be competing up around there, so it's only a matter of time before they sort out whatever issues there are. Eriksen's there. He's staying,
which is a massive boost.
Transfer windows are closed, so between now and January, they have to maximise on that. Between now and January, at least. I don't think he definitely won't be there next season. I think his contract is up, isn't it? It's got 1 year left in his contract.
Yeah,
so his contract's up. Either way, he's gone in the summer. But I think it's a kind of thing, if they get him to January, he's going to stay till the summer and go where he wants for free.
Yeah, you're probably in bonus territory already now with Eriksen, aren't you? In fact, you have him until Christmas, which is probably a boost that they needed, because like Ali isn't really at it at the minute like we've seen him before. So I think they kind of need his creation. They need his spark alongside Son to really be the impetus in the forward line to feed the beast that is Kane. Like, and
yeah,
I think Spurs fans will have breathed a collective sigh of relief that he is still there after the transfer deadline. So obviously he played that day. The window closed, so there doesn't seem to be any real animosity. He got on with it. He played relatively well.
Yeah.
So like
we don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but it appears that everything is fine.
Yeah,
and he's going to play on. He seems to be a professional. Like
100%. You took the words out of my mouth. I was just going to say he appears the type of a guy that whatever is happening with contracts and money, he'll leave that outside the four white lines, and he will play well within them. He just seems to be that type of a person.
Yeah, absolutely.
So to me, I reckon Spurs here handily enough. I think we're going to start to see Crystal Palace slightly start tumbling down the table a small bit, and I think it starts now. I'd say maybe 2-3 nil to Spurs on Saturday.
Yeah, I think so. I think, as I said before, Harry Kane notoriously starts his season slowly, but he got his hat-trick in the international, so he's off the mark, and it's probably ominous for Crystal Palace, and I'm sure he'll be right up for it.
Yeah,
at the weekend. It's a home game for Spurs. They want to put a few horrible results behind them. Yeah, I'm going to go 2-0 Spurs.
Yeah, I think we're both in agreement that while Palace are capable of random things, I just get a feeling that Spurs will want to kind of get the kinks out of their system now from the start of the season and kick on, and they'll do so, I think, this Saturday.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's move on to Saturday morning's fixture, which is Liverpool-Newcastle. But before we talk about this particular fixture, let's have a quick word on a player who's associated with both clubs.
Yeah.
And has been mounting off over the last week, Mr. Michael Owen.
Yeah, he's caused a bit of consternation on the Twitter machine, hasn't he? Himself and Alan Shearer going at it, Gary Lineker getting involved, Gary Neville chiming in, Carragher's had a cut, of course. Like,
I've never come across a player that was so good that is so disliked by the fans of every club he played for.
Yeah, he has this weird innate thing of coming across as like a really polite guy, but just saying all of the wrong things all the time.
Like, if he's trying to sell books, he's gone the very wrong way about it.
Well, I don't think he'll sell too many in Newcastle anyway with the comments and what was written in the book. I think while it's candid, while it's an autobiography, you can understand that, but like, he took a giant dump all over Newcastle Football Club, to be honest about it. And they're an extremely passionate fan base, a really proud club, have had some great days. And like, I think it was just a bit tasteless to say that he never wanted to be there. He was just collecting his checks, and that it was a terrible move for his career. And like, you know, it was just, I just thought it was lacking a small bit of class, to be honest.
It's lacking a lot of class. Craig Bellamy started this trend a couple of years ago with, you know, writing a book and then coming out with all these outrageous statements that he had in the book beforehand to get sales. But that's Craig Bellamy, and that's the kind of stuff you expect from him. That's the type of player he was his entire career. He was never behind the door. He was bad-mouthed everybody. He started fights at every club he was at. He fell out with teammates. That was Craig Bellamy. So I don't know if it's the right tactic for someone like Michael Owen.
Yeah.
Who, I mean, it's going to be difficult for him to sell books. I mean, I fall asleep listening to him on the fucking television. So.
Yeah, he's not the most awe-inspiring commentator or pundit you've ever heard in your life. And I don't think you'll have people falling over each other to rush out and buy his book, because judging by what he offers on TV, can't imagine him sitting down in a quiet room with a cup of tea, be anything too exciting writing that book, or whoever's ghostwriting it and having the chat with him, I'd say, could have threatened to fall asleep a few times, because he doesn't strike me as the most lively character of all time. But hopefully this Saturday morning's fixture will be slightly more lively than what I can imagine what that book is.
Unfortunately, I don't think it will be. If Newcastle's display at White Hart Lane or at this whatever Spurs are calling their new stadium, if their performance at that ground is anything to go by, we're not in for an exciting match.
No. They are going to come and sit right back.
Yeah.
They are going to just... I'd say if they cross the halfway line now more than five or six times, it seems to be that type of... If they can shut up shop and just frustrate the living daylights out of Liverpool and hope to God nick a goal on a corner and might nick a draw or something like that, it seems to be what the MO of this. And while these fixtures have been a bit tasty in previous years, obviously it was a late goal from, I think it was Divock Origi at the end of last season that kept Liverpool on track to battle for the title. They rescued a 2-1. Like Newcastle, no Rafa now. We're looking...
No Rafa, no Ayoze Perez, no Mitrovic, no John Joe Shelby.
Matt Ritchie out for 2 months.
Matt Ritchie. It's a different look Newcastle.
You can say that again. Yeah. Obviously, they got the shock result at Spurs, got their win, but it would be a massive surprise now if they were to go to Anfield and get anything, I think.
These are typically the games that Liverpool struggle in. This is Anfield, and Liverpool's record at Anfield over the past 24 months has been incredible.
Second to none, really. Yeah. It's ridiculous.
I think they have the best home record in Europe at the moment, which is the one big thing that stands to them with any team coming to Anfield. They have that behind them.
Absolutely. I just don't see where Newcastle get anything out of this game. I know you're saying this is the game that historically, or these type of games are the games that Liverpool would struggle in historically, but this is a new Liverpool team in the last 18 to 24 to 30 months. They're not that Liverpool team of old, like the Chris Dan Bull games like that that they really left after them. This team isn't like that anymore. You've three killers up front that'll pick apart a team in the blink of an eye.
Yeah.
You have a workaholic midfield that can also turn creator at times. And you have a rock solid back four, maybe the best back four in the league. Who in the name of God would have thought Liverpool would have had Liverpool would have had the best back four in the league? How times can change, and
there is hope, Frank Lampard. There is
hope. Yeah, you just never know what the Premier League. They say the NFL stands for not for long, and it's kind of the same now with the Premier League.
Yeah.
Things can change very quickly, and I just don't see how Newcastle are going to be able to break Liverpool down. Number one and number two. I just don't see how they'll be able to keep Liverpool attackers at bay. I just see nothing but an easy Liverpool win.
I think the form that Liverpool's front three have started the season on, particularly Firmino, and this is the type of game for him where you need a bit of physicality, and the form that the fullbacks have carried into the season, I think is going to stand to them in this game. The big thing with Liverpool in these games in previous seasons where Liverpool struggled to get anything out of the games, and the rhetoric from every pundit was, there's no plan B, there's no plan B, there's no plan B. And I think in the last season and so far this season, that's what Klopp has brought to the team.
Yeah.
You know, Liverpool can hurt teams from so many places on the pitch.
Yeah.
Other than the goalkeeper, everybody in the Liverpool team can provide goals.
Oh, 100%. We've seen him with Matip and Van Dijk from corners. Van Dijk obviously showed it with Southampton, and that Celtic were from free kicks. You have the two leading assists from fullbacks in the league, both playing for Liverpool. We've seen all the midfield do it, and we obviously all know what the front three can do. So
Liverpool have Van Dijk and Wijnaldum coming back off an excellent result on international, where Wijnaldum got an assist and a goal to beat Germany in a game that everybody expected them to get absolutely hammered in. So things are looking good at Liverpool for the time being.
Yeah, I think they're going to continue to look good after this weekend, to be honest.
Yeah, it's hard to see Liverpool not winning the game, but if they're not going to win the game, these are the type of games that stifle them.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go with a Liverpool win, but not by a great margin. Maybe 2 maximum.
I will get off the fence like you accused me of being on earlier, and I see it being a 3 or a 4-0. I don't see Newcastle scoring. I don't see where their goals are going to come from. Joe Linton, in fairness, looked good enough against Spurs. He showed great composure for the goal. Lovely touch, but I don't know. Other than that, I just don't see where creativity is coming from, and just they look listless. And to me, it's 3 or 4-0, comfortable for Liverpool.
Okay, I hope you're right.
Yeah, I know you do.
Okay, well, let's have a quick spin down to London to Watford versus Arsenal. Watford, who are welcoming back their ex-manager from the cold, Kike Sanchez Flores, who was appointed 30 minutes after they sacked Javi Gracia.
Speaking of cold, I don't think Javi Gracia's seat was cold before Kike Sanchez Flores was back sitting in it. 30 minutes after they'd sacked, or after they'd announced they sacked Gracia, he was declared as manager again. So they did not hang around.
It's very bad form. It's very bad form. I mean,
at least give a day.
Like, we know how these things work. Flores was probably appointed on Thursday or Friday. He was. They had meetings with him previous and worked out a deal with him. So he was probably appointed on Thursday or Friday. They could have waited 24 hours. They could have sacked Gracia. It's an international break. There's no games being played. They could have sacked him on the Sunday, as they did, and announced the appointment of Flores on Monday.
Yeah, easily, easily.
Just out of respect for what Gracia had done in the last season.
Yeah, 100%. Like,
because they performed very well under him up until the last 15-16 games. I think it was very bad form, and if any employer did that to me, I'd be very, very upset.
Oh, 100%. It wasn't right. As you said, there was no rush to declare it. What was the point? Why did you announce it 30 minutes later? Kind of reminded me of when Mark Hughes was sacked at half time by Man City a good few years ago. It just kind of, it just reminded me of that. I thought, and it was announced as well, you know. It was like that lack of class. It was just,
yeah,
there's no need for it. Like, as you said, there's no rush to announce Flores. Like, they're not playing until what? How many games after? Or how many days after? 10 days afterwards?
Yeah, like they're on Sunday.
They're on Sunday. So, yeah. And it was announced. When was it announced?
On Sunday just gone.
Sunday just gone. So you've a week.
Yeah.
You've a week. Like that, and you can get things in motion under the radar. You don't have to go full global with it 30 minutes after you've sacked him. But look, it's done. We have to move on. It was a kind of an oversight, a lack of class.
Yeah.
The game at hand on Sunday, well, what do you reckon? I think I just don't see how they don't keep conceding goals, and Arsenal looked like they're in the form at the minute. Their back four is kind of flustered, but their front three is looking potent, and I see that front three running riot.
Results haven't really gone as Arsenal would have wanted. I know they're sitting fifth in the league after four games, but they've looked good in fits and starts, but they haven't really set the world alight.
No.
And there's someone, it's always been the same with Arsenal, even under Arsene Wenger, when they have a little spell where things don't go great for them, eventually someone gets punished.
Yeah.
In a big way. And the only thing that might go in Watford's favour is the buoyancy of getting a new manager. Sometimes that gives the club a little boost. The players want to impress the new manager because they want to keep their place in the team. Because let's be fair, none of them deserve their place in the team for what they put into the last 15, 16 games. 5 wins in 16 games is not good for a Premier League side.
No.
So maybe the players will step up for the new manager because they want to keep their place. Or maybe it'll just be a continuation of the same and Arsenal will go there and roll over them 4-0.
Yeah, I see a continuation of the same. I don't see it being that buoyant. Like, this manager is very familiar with this club. It's not as if there's a very new... A lot of the players in Watford will know what Flyers is about.
Yeah.
I don't think it'll feel all that new.
Yeah.
I'll feel like all that over going back to what we got rid of a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of feels like that. And to me, I just see Watford... I don't see this being a massive... Like, I thought it was kind of reactionary. I know they haven't had a great run of things recently, Watford. Obviously, they've only 1 point after four games, but I thought it was just a small bit too quick.
Yeah.
And I just don't see this being a major catalyst or a spark of for change in the right direction. And
I will say, though, I am a big fan of Kike Sanchez-Flores as a manager. Mm-hmm. I think at one point...
They got rid of him too prematurely the first time as well.
At one point, not so long ago, Madrid, he was one of the best managers in the world. He was tipped for the Spain job. He was, you know...
Mm.
He fell from grace very quickly, but I still think he's a quality manager.
Oh, you have to be if you were held in that sort of esteem in the first place, you know? Exactly. Like, so he's a very good manager, but... Look, you can only manage what's in front of you in training, and it's not great. It doesn't appear to be too great anyway. Yeah. And the morale seems to be very low at that club. Obviously, got a draw away to Newcastle in the previous game week after Will Hughes put them ahead early doors, and Newcastle came back and rescued a draw. But it was a deserved draw, to be honest. Like, Newcastle were probably the better team in that game, so that probably tells you where Watford are at the minute. And I just don't see, we saw it in the second half against Spurs, Arsenal were flying.
Yeah.
You know, going forward, they were flying. Now, Spurs obviously have their own questions answered about what was going on at the back there with the back four they played, but Arsenal looked rampant, and they could have scored 4 or 5 in that second half against Spurs, and it wouldn't surprise me if they scored 4 or 5 here against Watford.
I do hope Emery persists with the three up front, especially for this game, because this is a game where they can go out and actually get something from the game.
Big time. If Arsenal go and score early, they could go and put up a nice cricket score. They could, like, they could have Watford open, and Watford have to come out and attack, going 1-0 down, and then they could just tear them apart.
Yeah.
That would be how I'd see the fixture going. I'd see Arsenal score early, Watford trying to go out and get an equaliser, get punished, and then just heads go down again and lose maybe 3 or 4-0.
I gotta go for 3-0 Arsenal.
Yeah, I'd probably agree with you to a T there, to be honest.
Perfect.
And I suppose looking at another fixture that will probably likely be 3 or 4-0 to away team, we have Man City away to Norwich at the evening fixture on Saturday. One is sure to have at least 4 or 5 goals in it, surely.
Yeah, easily. I don't think there's much need to do a massive amount of analysis on this, other than we spoke extensively about Norwich in the past few podcasts, because they are playing excellent football, open, expansive, attacking football, but they don't have the players to sustain it in the Premier League. And that's why, even though they're scoring bags of goals, they're sitting 19th in the Premier League.
Yeah.
And I don't think much is going to change there. I think Manchester City are probably going to... they could score 6.
Yeah, honestly, I was actually going to say it'd be 5 or 6, but I do see Norwich scoring. It seems to be a thing of Norwich can't defend and City don't care about defending. They don't have to defend. Yeah. If you're going to score 4 every game, you kind of don't really need to defend too stringently.
I think Otamendi is a bit of a massive liability, actually, for Manchester City. I think Laporte getting injured is a massive loss, so John Stones is going to come back in.
Yeah.
But the problem is, for other teams, it's exactly like Pep's Barcelona sides that had Mascherano and Piqué at the back. They're susceptible at the back, but no one ever gets a chance to get near their defenders.
Yeah,
because you're spending so much down the other end of the field trying to stop the flood of goals going in.
Look, a bad defender that doesn't have to defend is a good defender.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? It's just the way it is. If you don't have to defend, it doesn't matter how good or bad you are. It's inconsequential.
That's poetic.
It is. It is indeed. And that's just the way, it's just the way it is with City. Like, they've lost their best centre half in Laporte. Imagine if, say, Liverpool lost Van Dijk, maybe.
Yeah.
That would be catastrophic to their title chances.
Yeah.
Whereas City lose Laporte, it's barely reported. Do you know? Like, they can pick up the slack so easily because they're so strong going forward. And they have the likes of Zinchenko and what's the other fullback whose name eludes me?
Walker.
Kyle Walker. Like, they're so solid everywhere else in the field that you can lose such an influential player and it not matter that much. Yeah, like, you know?
Really,
so
is true.
They're just spoiled. We know if we can talk about till the cows come home. We know how strong they are in depth, like their squad. So it's going to be 5 or 6-1, I reckon.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to go for 4-0 just to be conservative. Okay, well, that's pretty much, they're all the main fixtures of the weekend. And sorry if your team is one of the ones that we don't consider to be the main fixture of the weekend. But what we'll do is, just before we wrap up this week's podcast, we'll just rattle through the remaining games, pick a score, a little bit of chat.
Sounds good. A bit of chat.
This is dragging on, and I'm sure you've got things to do rather than listen to us waffle about football.
Exactly.
Sheffield United, Southampton.
That is a tough one to call. That is
Sheffield United at home. Tough prospect for Southampton.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. They've been riding a bit of a wave lately, Southampton, to be fair.
They have.
We're unlucky against Liverpool. Got a good draw against United. Like,
their new signing Kevin Danzo is suspended, which can only be a bonus for them considering how you performed against United.
He looks like a fella who was trying for an early day, didn't he?
He did. He was like a fish out of water, I think is the best way to describe it.
Yeah, it was an interesting one. Sheffield aren't going to score a lot of goals this season.
No,
they're not. Like, they're, and we know this personally because they are kind of made up of a front two of our Republic of Ireland strikers. So McGoldrick obviously got his first Republic of Ireland goal in the international break. His confidence will be up. Callum Robinson scored against Chelsea to help them get a draw. But I don't see Sheffield United scoring too many goals. This could be one of those 1-0s or 1-1s. I just don't really know or care. It's going to be one of these fixtures that is way down the list on Match of the Day, and it's going to get about 3 minutes coverage for Match of the Day, so that's all it deserves from us, 1-1.
Yeah, I'm going to go 1-0 Southampton.
That's fair enough.
Because
you're a Southampton fanboy.
Because everybody knows that I have a soft spot for Southampton.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Brighton Burnley has nil all written all over it.
Oh, I don't know. Brighton can't defend is the only issue. Burnley will attack this game.
The only thing I will say, actually, maybe I jumped the gun a little bit with my prediction there, because Burnley's front two at the moment, they look very dangerous.
But yeah, Barnes and Woods, they do. They're looking chancy. They're looking hungry. To me, Burnley will attack this game. This is a game you can go to Brighton and win.
Yeah.
They're susceptible. They're one of the favourites to go down. And these are the type of games that Sean Dyche is going to be really targeting, saying, lads, go out and have a go here. Like,
yeah, this is where our points are coming from.
Absolutely, and I can see them winning 2-0. I just see Brighton struggling massively this year.
Yeah, actually, I'm going to agree with you, 2-0, and I'm going to go a goal apiece for Barnes and Wood.
That's fair enough. That's a good prediction.
I watched how they played against Liverpool last week, and obviously Liverpool had a little bit too much for them, but Jesus, they were impressive.
Yeah, they're a handful. Like, they're a handful for centre-halves. You would not like to see them
marking
the two of them. Like, oh.
Although, in saying that, Brighton do have Shane Duffy at the back, and he loves an out scrap.
He does, especially the big fella. That's a very valid point. He loves an out physical battle. Like, so yeah. To me, that'll be one of the ones now that could result in, maybe I'm going to make a call here, could be a red card in that. Among that trio.
Call you out on this next week.
Yeah, I do. You can make me look stupid if it doesn't come true, but a red card among that trio.
Right. Everton travel to Bournemouth.
That'll be a good game, I reckon.
Yeah.
I love watching Bournemouth play. I love the type of football they play. Everton haven't started the season like they would have imagined they would, I think, with the signings. They're maybe still finding their feet a bit, a lot of new introductions to the squad. That's a tough one. That's a tough one to call now.
I think Bournemouth are going to get a result out of this.
I'm kind of half fancying that as well. I think
Marco Silva is another manager that's in a bit of trouble.
He is. He is, considering the money that Everton have spent. And Everton don't usually spend that type of money now. They've pumped it in for the last two seasons.
Exactly.
And they're not starting to see dividends yet.
They started last season very well with all their new signings. Everybody was talking about them breaking into the top four. It fell apart halfway through the year.
Yeah.
Kind of picked up again and near the end,
but the damage was done.
But they've started this again very poorly. Mm-hmm. And for the players they have on the pitch, they should be getting much better results.
What they kind of lack, I think, is this kind of solidity or this kind of toughness and kind of guile to grind out results or something. A lot of games that they maybe should be nicking something from or winning, they just don't. And that, to me, is a sign of a fragile squad.
They have this, what they remind me of, and this might sound like the maddest thing in the world, but you know,
it's likely to when you qualify with that before you go.
do you know when a manager takes over a team and he gets maybe one season, but the team is kind of half his team and half the last manager's team, and there's no real cohesion.
It's not a bad shout. No,
that's what Everton remind me of. But they shouldn't be like that. He's been there long enough to have his own team and for them to be all playing for him.
Yeah, there's a solid squad there, and I just don't get how they're not gelling. But maybe it'll happen in time.
Yeah,
it is early. It's only four game weeks four games played. But Bournemouth is never a place anyone wants to go. The crowd on top of you, they're loud, even though it's not a massive attendance by any. It's the smallest in the Premier League, I think.
Yeah.
They're only 10,500. But it's just a tough place to go and play football.
Like, and Bournemouth haven't stayed in the Premier League this long by losing these games.
Oh, no.
These are the games at the Vitality Stadium that make Bournemouth season.
Oh, 100%, 100%. They grind out and they really battle. And when the crowd sense that, the crowd get behind them and it's tough. Yeah. It's such a tough place to go. But now Charlie Daniels being out is a big loss for them. He's a kind of a character leader, and he worked so hard in the off-season apparently to get back after a knee injury, and then he goes and gets another knee injury. It's very, very disheartening.
Absolutely.
That is a bit of a loss, but Wilson is looking banging form at the minute.
What a goal.
Yeah, what a goal. That's right. I have to say, like, you're a bit of a Southampton fanboy. I'm a bit of a Bournemouth fanboy. I love watching him play. I really like Eddie Howe. He just strikes me as a type of a really likeable guy, and I'd say a lot of players like working for him.
Yeah, it seems to be that way.
Yeah, they hold on to a lot of players that could end up gravitating to other clubs. Mm. And I just kind of see, I like that kind of feel around the club. To me, I see it. I've must have called nearly every game in the Premier League a draw at this stage now. But I see a draw here, and I see a scoring draw. I think a 1-1 maybe.
I think Bournemouth can nick something from this game. And I think probably 1-0 Bournemouth. I think things are sour at Everton.
Maybe. Yeah. I think the next few games now will tell a lot in Everton's season.
Yeah.
It'll tell a lot where their ambitions lie, I think. Will it be pushing towards Europa League type of thing? Yeah. Or will it be mid-table and fans disillusioned?
I don't know what it is, but it's probably, as you say, tinfoil hat stuff. But just looking at Marco Silva's facial expression on the sideline the last few games, he looks like a man that knows his job's nearly up.
Maybe he's not seeing what he wants to be seen in the training ground. And it's quite possible. It's quite possible.
Yeah.
But so we'll go, you're going 1-0 Bournemouth, I'll go 1-1.
Excellent. Right, which brings us to our last game, which is the Battle of the Claret and Blue, Aston Villa versus West Ham.
I was actually going to mention that earlier. This reminds me of when I was young, about a proper young lad 15 years ago type of thing, where you'd flick on Monday Night Football and it was Villa and West Ham, and it was always a game, just a grubby nil all. I looked at the fixture and I just got a bang of nostalgia.
I haven't
seen that fixture for years in the Premier League. It felt really good to actually just look at the fixture.
It's just real, like, a big time.
Yeah, they should bring John Watson back or something. See what they can do just for one game. It's just one of those ones that really just, it feels old school. And we've already mentioned that Villa Park is going to seem like a tiny little mini fortress this season.
Yes.
Like, obviously, bigger teams are going to go there and expect results, but this is going to be a toughish place to go. Nice journey for West Ham of a Monday evening. West Ham have looked good in their last two games. That signing, the Frenchman, Seb Halle, looks the real deal.
Yeah.
He came from Frankfurt. He looks really good. He's looked a handful. He's acrobatic, athletic, fast, strong.
Yeah.
He's well able to finish. He looks like you have Lanzini and Felipe Anderson look well at it at the minute as well.
Yeah.
To me, West Ham look good, but I'm going to go...
another draw.
I'm going to go with a draw, but I'm going to go with a scoreless draw here. I'm going to go nil all. I'm not going to just say, oh, it's a draw. I'm going to go nil all draw.
My God, if I put on an accumulator with all your predictions...
We'll be buying Paddy Power, not to mind the house.
And this many draws come in. Have you ever seen how the odds on an accumulator jump when you pick a draw?
Yes, I have.
We're in the money.
Anyone that enjoys obscure Simpsons references... We would be like Chester J. Lampwick driving around in a solid gold rocket car if our accumulator comes off this week.
That's a paddling.
Yeah, that is a paddling. And I'd say that is a lovely note to end things on now.
Well, I'm going to give my prediction. I think West Ham have too much.
I actually forgot you hadn't predicted.
I think West Ham are looking great this season.
They do, yeah.
I think Pellegrini, although he looks like a corpse that somebody propped up...
That is absolutely so accurate. Yeah. It looked like he fell into a barrel of vinegar. Literally, this like...
Oh, God. Anyway, yes, Pellegrini, it's not so long ago he was managing teams like Manchester City and stuff like that. He's. I'm not saying West Ham is a step down, but I'm saying West Ham have done very well to get him as a manager.
Yeah, that's fair enough,
I think they've built a very good squad on very little.
Yeah.
And I think they're playing better than I've seen West Ham play for a very long time. So in saying all that, I think that they can go to Villa and get a 1 or 2 nil.
They very well could do. Like, you're seeing Yarmolenko playing well for the first time in about 12 years. You're having you have Lanzini, who obviously we all know how good he is. You have Filip Andersson, and Halle looks to have added another lovely string to their bow in the attack. So they do look like maybe them and Leicester could be the teams that are pushing for top six this year.
I don't know. I don't know if they're ready to push for top six, but I do think they're better than they have been for a very long time.
Mm. I'm maybe just looking at the likes of the absence of maybe the Everton's, you had Southampton a couple of years ago. Do you know, the Bournemouths were pushing up towards 7th, 8th a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
They're probably just that little bit down a bit more this year. So
I can still see Southampton up in around that area. I think obviously Newcastle are going to vacate the 10th or 11th position.
Yeah, 100%. They're gone.
Crystal Palace are going to again vacate that position. They may stay in the Premier League, but they're going to be closer to the bottom than they were the last couple of seasons. So there is room for the likes of West Ham.
Mm.
And, I used to work with a staunch West Ham fan, and at the start of every season, I'd be like, well, how are you feeling about this season? And every season he said the same thing. Mid-table mediocrity.
So you reckon his mantra will ring true once more? Yeah?
Yeah. That's what they hope for. That's the best they can aim for. But, you know, it's better than fighting for the relegation, which they have been in previous seasons very recently. So
it is, and they won't be there this year. Their squad is just too good for that. They just won't. They'll just accrue enough points to they'll be safe by Christmas or January type deal. You know, they'll know maybe they won't be mathematically there, but they'll know they will be there come April or May. So they'll concentrate then on being top half and maybe breaking into that top six or seven. But it probably a couple of seasons, maybe too early. But who knows?
Right, I think we'll leave it there for this week's podcast.
We will indeed.
If you liked what you heard, make sure to follow, subscribe, leave a review. If you didn't like what you hear, subscribe anyway, because the more subscribers we get, the better. You don't have to listen to it every week. Just subscribe.
And make sure you give us a rating if you're listening on Apple Podcast, and just give us a rating even if it's 1 star and you hate us. And give us make sure you leave a comment as well. And even if it's absolute just abuse, sure, look. Well, at least we'll know you hate us anyway, so that's the most important thing.
Most football conversations do descend into abuse at some point. Yeah, anyway.
Spite is like the backbone of football, like so.
Follow us on Twitter, Premier_podcast, or find us on Facebook at Premier League Preview Podcast. See, I was getting really good at saying that, now it's becoming a tongue twister again. But anyway, follow us on Facebook on the Premier League Preview Podcast. There you go. On that note, good night.
Good luck.
This is the Premier League Preview Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Premier_podcast. Find us on Facebook under Premier League Preview Podcast or online at plpreview.com.